People's Tribune Radio is on the air. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. On this edition of PTR, we take a look at the very hot issue of civil liberties with our guest, investigative reporter for the San Francisco Bay Guardian, A.C. Thompson, and lecturer, writer, and people's historian, Chris Mann.
With the McCarthy legislation, I think what we see there really is a very concentrated effort to destroy the left wing of the trade union movement in the United States, to force the trade union movement into the mold of business unionism, and again, to prevent a situation where those forces within the union movement and within society that are attempting to organize the very poorest section of U.S. society are prevented from creating the kinds of organizations that they want, prevented from using certain kind of tactics like the secondary boycott as a result of the Taft-Hartley Act, which is passed as a result of this whole anti-communist and McCarthy hysteria.
What we saw with the war on drugs was fundamental rights getting chipped away. You saw civil asset forfeiture, and this is where you're alleged to be a drug user, you're alleged to be a drug seller, and the police and prosecutors come seize your assets before you've even gone to trial. And they use these assets to fund more police operations. So there's a profit motive in busting you and taking your stuff. And this is a tactic that has spread from just being a drug war phenomenon, and now this is something that you see in supposedly quote-unquote blighted areas in Oakland, California. This is something that you see when the cars of men who solicit prostitutes get taken. The whole idea is spreading beyond that. And so even before we got to this point, we were prosecuting another war, the war on drugs, and we were watching the Bill of Rights, our civil liberties, the crucial amendments to the Constitution, wither on the vine.
People's Tribune Radio is produced by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, who also publish the newspaper People's Tribune, Tribuno del Pueblo. Stay tuned for contact and ordering information at the end of the program. Proposed secret military tribunals and increased investigation and surveillance powers for law enforcement are worrisome. But are these types of attacks on civil liberties really anything new? Historian Chris Mann doesn't think so.
There's a clear pattern of these things being ultimately directed against the poor and the dispossessed and the bottom section of society, really. And this starts at the beginning of the United States, just 7 years after the adoption of the Constitution, with the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798, where you have a series of acts that restrict freedom of the press, that restrict the rights of immigrants, that severely restrict civil liberties. And these allow a certain section of society, the elite of the newly formed United States, to prevent protests from below, really. I mean, they're used against certain publications which tend to support Thomas Jefferson in his battles with John Adams for political control of the newly formed republic. But what they also do is stop that most dispossessed section of society, what was called at that time the mechanics, the working class elements in the society, from being able to express themselves, because they would write letters to the editor of the Aurora newspaper in Philadelphia and the other publications that were pro-French Revolution and for the ideas of someone like Thomas Paine. I think the next major attack on civil liberties that we see in the country is once the abolitionist movement develops, where you have in New England the development of the Liberator newspaper, you have other newspapers that are formed by free African Americans, you have attempts of free African Americans to smuggle abolitionist publications and pamphlets into the South, and as a result of that you have restrictions on freedom of the press, you have restrictions on on publications being able to be distributed through the mail. You have actual mob violence and murder of a very heroic newspaper editor, Elijah Lovejoy, in Alton, Illinois, in November of 1837. Again, you have this situation where it's an attempt to stop the poor in the form of the impoverished but recently freed African American individuals who make it to the North, or runaway slaves who make it to the North and begin publishing, like Frederick Douglass, attempts to stop Walker's Appeal from being distributed in the South, and an attempt to defend the interests of absolutely the most privileged section of society, the Southern slave owners.
While no one was killed, it's important to note here that the harassment of newspaper publishers attempting to stand up for civil liberties is not something that's relegated to the historical past. Just a few short weeks ago, at a mid-year graduation ceremony for university students in Sacramento, California, Janice Bessler Heafy, president and publisher of the Sacramento Bee newspaper, was heckled off stage during her speech at the city's Arco Arena when she began to talk about civil liberties and the need to protect them. Mahan says that war protesters have also had to deal with U.S. attempts to curtail their civil liberties. Now, he's not talking about the Vietnam War here.
We can see it again during the First World War, where as a section of the labor movement, particularly the industrial workers of the world, takes a stand against U.S. participation in the First World War, that they are denounced, that their civil liberties are curtailed, that there's an espionage act that's passed that makes it illegal to discourage people from joining the armed forces, which is interpreted by the Supreme Court as meaning that people who pass out anti-draft leaflets can be sent to prison. And you have a situation where the industrial workers of the world is basically destroyed as a result of this anti-civil liberties legislation that's passed during the First World War. And so an organization that was one of the first industrial unions that was really trying to represent the interests of the workers who are part-time workers or who were in mass production industries who weren't the more privileged craft workers, this union is destroyed, and the section of society that it represents is stifled as a result of this anti-civil liberties legislation. We also see this during the Second World War with the internment of Japanese Americans, where that allows some very wealthy people in California basically to take the land of Japanese rice farmers and other farmers throughout California and to enrich themselves.
But attacks on civil liberties and labor unions are not just designed to quiet opposition to foreign wars.
With the McCarthy legislation, I think what we see there really is a very concentrated effort to destroy the left wing of the trade union movement in the United States, to force the trade union movement into the mold of business unionism, and again to prevent a situation where those forces within the union movement and within society that are attempting to organize the very poorest section of U.S. society are prevented from creating the kinds of organizations that they want, prevented from using certain kind of tactics like the secondary boycott as a result of the Taft-Hartley Act, which is passed as a result of this whole anti-communist and McCarthy hysteria. And again, this attempt to stifle the poorer section of society. And this continues on through the civil rights movement, where a lot of the McCarthy-era legislation and practices are then used to infiltrate the different organizations of the civil rights and anti-war movement and prevent, I think, the part of that effort that really was comprised of the most working class elements from being able to play more of a role, so that you have the assassination of leaders of the Black Panther Party like Fred Hampton, for instance. So again and again, I think what we see is this situation where these attacks on civil liberties are used against the bottom section of society.
The historical aspects of the U.S. government's attempts to curtail civil liberties notwithstanding, A.C. Thompson, an investigative reporter with the San Francisco Bay Guardian newspaper, says that perhaps to get the clearest idea of what's happening with civil liberties in the current war on terrorism, the place that we might best look is the so-called war on drugs.
I think the real predecessor to the war on terrorism was the war on drugs. And in that, you had a vague, amorphous enemy, and you had a real problem. At the same time, it's basically an unconquerable problem. And it's something that you can throw all different kinds of legislative salvos at, and you're never going to solve if your whole plan is, well, we're going to crack down on drugs. We're going to keep drugs from getting into the country. We're going to penalize drug users and drug sellers, but you can significantly chip away at people's freedoms without them being upset, appalled, annoyed, angered about it, under the pretext of, well, we're prosecuting this war on drugs. And what we saw during the war on drugs, which is obviously still going on in the San Francisco Bay Area, the BART police, the subway police are teaming up with U.S. Customs to bring drug-sniffing dogs onto the trains and bust small-time drug users at this moment, which I think is definitely something that they're doing at this very pro-police moment in time in the post-September 11th era. But what we saw with the war on drugs was fundamental rights getting chipped away. You saw civil asset forfeiture, and this is where you're alleged to be a drug user, you're alleged to be a drug seller, and the police and prosecutors come seize your assets before you've even gone to trial. And they use these assets to fund more police operations. So there's a profit motive in busting you and taking your stuff. And this is a tactic that has spread from just being a drug war phenomenon, and now this is something that you see in supposedly quote-unquote blighted areas in Oakland, California. This is something that you see when the cars of men who solicit prostitutes get taken. The whole idea is spreading beyond that. And so even before we got to this point, we were prosecuting another war, the war on drugs, and we were watching the Bill of Rights, our civil liberties, the crucial amendments to the Constitution, wither on the vine.
You're listening to People's Tribune Radio. I'm your host, Mike Thornton, and today our topic is civil liberties. Historian Chris Mahon.
Of course, the official reason is that these things are necessary to keep the country safe. But I think, in fact, if you look at the underlying situation in the country today, that we have a situation where this country is in recession, and the powers that be in this country knew that this situation was coming, and they knew it for quite a long time, and they understand that this economic situation is extremely serious, that what we have is something qualitatively new in the economy, where we have the introduction of qualitatively new productive forces of electronics and robotics, and there are millions of people who are losing their jobs now who are never going to get their jobs back. I mean, certainly if you look at what's happened, for instance, in the steel industry over the last several years, where dozens of steel companies have gone bankrupt because it's just not necessary to have the numbers of people that it used to take to produce steel. That's just one indication of the kind of things that are happening in the economy. So we have a ruling class in this country that knows that the economy is in serious, serious trouble, and they know that that's going to mean expressions of discontent on the part of the mass of the population. And so I think what they're doing is that they're getting ready for that situation, and they are putting in place the means to stop that expression of discontent, to make it difficult for people to organize, not only make it difficult legally and logistically, but even ideologically or morally. I mean, they're creating a situation where if anyone raises concerns, if they fight for demands for a better life, that somehow they're supposedly being unpatriotic. That this legislation allows the state to spy on people, the different pieces of legislation and the unleashing of the FBI and the different emergency measures aren't going to end simply with immigrant workers. And the situation that's evolving isn't going to affect just one ethnicity or people from one part of the world. You're going to have a situation where it's now acceptable for the government to spy on people. And I think what's going to happen is that all of this legislation and these emergency decrees are going to be used against people who try and fight for a better life and put forward the interests of their class.
Bay Guardian investigative reporter A.C. Thompson.
There's a whole new emphasis on intelligence, on gathering intelligence. The other point is that it's ideological, and that you can see already this starts with, well, we're very, very concerned about the Islamists. The next thing is, we'll be very, very concerned about anyone who has dissident views. And you see on the SF Chronicles website, there's a story about a senior citizen who works out in a gym in San Francisco and is having political dialogue with people about the post-terrorist war, the post-terrorist world, and the war on terrorism and the attacks on civil liberties. Mm. And the next thing you know, ironically enough, the FBI show up to investigate him at his door. And this isn't fiction, and it's not comedy, but it's very darkly comic. Inherently, it's going to be ideological. Inherently, it's going to be political. And it's not just going to stay with one scapegoated group that's going to be surveilled and targeted. In San Francisco, we have a case in Superior Court right now, two AIDS dissident activists who politics I don't agree with, their views I don't subscribe to, David Pascarelli and Michael Petrelis. They made harassing and intimidating phone calls to public health researchers, to Chronicle reporters, to Bay Guardian reporters. The next thing you know, these guys are being branded terrorists by the district attorney's office. They're being investigated by the FBI, according to their defense lawyers. And they are sitting on $600,000 bail each for harassing phone calls. Now, that's more than a lot of murderers are sitting on. And you can see immediately, even if these guys aren't being dealt with by the Patriot Act, they could be. And you can see immediately that there is terrorist can be a catch-all, and this is going to work at many different levels.
Chris Mann.
If you look at what happened in World War I, for instance, there you had a situation where there was a lot of concern about German saboteurs or whatever, and they passed these different pieces of legislation. But then they went through and they proceeded to denounce anybody who went out on strike, anybody who tried to form a union, anyone who fought for a different kind of society where the United States wasn't controlled by a tiny handful of millionaires and billionaires. Well, I think we're going to see the same situation today. And in fact, I think we're already seeing it. I'll just give you an example from my own street. I live in a working class neighborhood here in Chicago. There's a school down at the end of my street. Well, one day, some probably young kids broke some windows at that school. The school proceeded to post these flyers on every house on the street, accusing whoever broke those windows of being, quote, terrorists, unquote. Now, people should not break the windows of schools. I'm not condoning that. But we all know that kids do things that they shouldn't do as they're growing up. They sometimes get into trouble. This happens. It is an almost inevitable part of people growing up. Those people that did that are not, quote, terrorists, unquote. And it, when we have an environment in a society where anything that goes wrong, anything that's out of the ordinary can be denounced as being, quote, terrorists, unquote, any kind of dissent. I mean, people raising questions about secret military tribunals can be accused of being unpatriotic. An environment is being created where anyone who demands change is subject to being politically isolated, or anyone who demands a better life, who protests the fact that they've been laid off from their job, is subject to being isolated. There was a teacher strike recently where some of the teachers on the East Coast were in a neighborhood that, where a number of people had died in the September 11th attacks. And there were people in that community who said, well, how can someone be striking for a better life? How can they care about that when there are people from this community that have died in the September 11th attacks? Well, people have the right to, I mean, of course, respecting the memory of the people who died on September 11th, people still have the right to fight for a better life and to go out on strike. This whole environment that's being created, I think, is extremely dangerous, and both the actual legal measures and executive decrees that are being put in place right now can be used against the poor of this country, and I think will be used against the poor of this country, and the whole sort of atmosphere that's being created is also going to be turned, I think, against the poor of this country, and both those things are very dangerous. I think ultimately the only way that we in the United States are going to be secure, or anyone in the world is going to be secure, is when we have a society where everyone has enough to eat, and not just in this country, but in the world. Everyone has decent clothing, decent housing, an opportunity to express themselves culturally, decent education. And we can't set it up as a situation of some people are going to have and some people are not. And we can't set it up as we are going to be some kind of fortress that's gonna fight the rest of the world or something like that. I think the interests of people who are being laid off because of globalization in the United States is the same ultimately as people who are experiencing poverty as a result of globalization in other parts of the world. That our interest is in creating a new world. It's in ending a situation where 447 billionaires have more wealth than 2.75 billion people on this planet. And taking the incredible resources that we have today, these incredibly powerful tools of computers and robotics, and putting them in the hands of the majority of the society, so that we can create a cooperative society in which everyone does have that food, that clothing, that housing, and that education. And if we can do that, then we can finally have a peaceful and orderly world. There's two choices before the human race right now, really. I mean, one, and there's two different conceptions of what America's role in the world should be, and I think we, the people of the United States, have to make a choice, and the people of the world have to make a choice. I mean, one conception says that the United States equals capitalism, and that what it has to do is impose that capitalism on the whole world. It has to impose globalization on the world. And it's going to take its sweatshops everywhere, and it's going to turn everything into a duplication of capitalism in the United States. And then if that leads to mass poverty and mass starvation, and we'll crush the people who lash out in some way as a result of that poverty. That's one conception. And I think that's a conception that leads to police state tactics outside the United States and a police state in the United States. And I think what it does is that it really dishonors the American Revolution. Because I think what the the American Revolution and the vision of a new society is what Thomas Paine said. Thomas Paine said that about the American Revolution of the 1770s, we hold in our hands the power to make the world over again. And he wasn't talking about the Gap and you know, imposing some sweatshop on somebody. I think he was talking about a world where minority rule ended. He meant the minority rule of King George III and an elite in England and an elite in its 13 colonies at that time. But he wanted to end minority rule. After Thomas Paine, other people in the United States fought to abolish slavery. And I think today we have the possibility in the world of getting rid not just of monarchism or of chattel slavery, but of the minority rule of millionaires and billionaires, and taking the plenty of society, taking the computers and the robots that human beings have developed as a result of their toil to develop science, and putting those in the hands of the great majority of the human race, and creating a society in which there's distribution according to need. That's now actually possible in society, and we can have that kind of world today so that we don't have to fight somebody from some other country. We don't have to be pitted against them. That our interests, the interests of the majority of people in the United States, are ultimately the same interests as theirs, and that we can finally live up to fulfill what Thomas Paine was talking about of creating the world over again.
Thanks to our guests, investigative reporter for the San Francisco Bay Guardian, A.C. Thompson, and People's Historian, Chris Mann, for joining us on the program today. They were interviewed by PTR correspondents Sandy Reed and Steve Miller. People's Tribune Radio is produced by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America. We particularly wanted to do a program looking at civil liberties because high-ranking officials in the Bush administration have put forth the premise that questioning our government is tantamount to treason. That is a proposition that we believe cannot be left to stand. The League of Revolutionaries for a New America advocates for a cooperative society where the same tools of electronics, computerization, and robotics that are being used to displace millions of workers worldwide are used for the benefit of the planet as a whole. If you'd like more information about the League or our print or other audio publications, you can contact us by calling 1-800-691-6888, 1-800-691-6888, or visit our website, lrna.org. I'm your host, Mike Thornton, and on behalf of the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, we'd like to invite you to join us next time for another edition of People's Tribune Radio.